The Blast from Our Past Network.
What if I could put him in front of you? The man that ruined your life. Would you kill him?
By the time you listen to this, 7 years will have passed. Here you are, at the beginning of your new life. It can be overwhelming, knowing the future.
Talking Back.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Talking Back. It is the first Monday of the month, which activates a time travel movie for us here at Talking Back. And this month, a member of an elite group of time-traveling agents who stop crime before it happens must prevent a horrific attack in New York City. From 2004, I don't know who that was, by the way, some random dude just reading,
who you were channeling?
Reading a synopsis. From 2014, we are covering Predestination. Welcome to co-host Dean.
Oh, hello. Hi.
Dean, what the hell did we just watch?
I don't know, man.
That's what we're here to find out.
I don't know, man.
I don't know what the hell just happened, but I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I did not like it.
Oh, you did not like it?
I really did not like it. Yeah, which is weird because I know there's a lot of people out there that like this. This has like some high ratings out there. I watched it twice. I did not like it.
Okay, so this is very, very interesting because I actually thought you would like this, but okay. I completely understand because after I watched it the first time and as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, I don't think this is a good movie. I don't know if I like it or not. It was one of those ones when it was over, I'm like, I have no idea where I stand with this movie. This movie is either really good or it's really bad. And I had to watch it again. And as I watched it again, I got swayed to the this is a good movie side of the equation. So I actually didn't think I'd even make it there. I thought I would just be like, this is not really for me. But I think it's good. I think it's good.
Okay. Yeah. I think it has some time travel elements that I like, which is cool. There's definitely some ideas in there that I'm like, ah, cool idea. But yeah, on the second watch, when I already was like, I don't think I like that, but I'm going to watch it again because I want to like get some, I want to see if I miss something, pull in some positivity. I just got more mad at it the second time.
Really? Yeah. Oh man, I liked it the second time because basically everything that's confusing on your first watch is it's all there in the movie for you to catch on your second viewing, and you catch it all. You're like, oh, they just like, it's all there. If you're paying enough attention, you can sort of unravel this mystery, but of course it's so convoluted and confusing the first time around. There's no way you would ever catch anything.
So, I mean, without getting into any of it, I feel like I had it the whole way through on the first watch. And that was kind of, I was hoping it would throw me in a different direction.
Well, you couldn't have possibly had all of it.
No, not all of it, but we'll get to it. There's a specific scene where I paused and I broke down what I thought. It was very confusing and didn't quite line up, but it also exactly lined up.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I was hoping that we would unearth a movie like this in our time travel walkthrough.
Right. Yeah.
This is the type of stuff I was looking for. This movie will for surely now travel with me through time. Because I'll never be able to forget it. It's like it's imprinted in my brain. It's a brain fuck of the highest proportions. And yeah,
it's bananas.
It's not overly sci-fi either. This is much more of a time travel drama, I would suggest.
Yep.
There's a light sprinkling of sci-fi, but
from
that synopsis that the stranger read at the top of the episode there, that is nothing. Like that scratches so lightly the very surface of this movie.
Oh yeah.
That, you know, you read that and you're like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. I'm interested in a time travel movie about that. That's not really what this movie is.
But you don't really get to see any of that at all.
No. That occurs, but yeah, almost as like an afterthought of everything else that happens in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was quite an interesting movie. Here's one of the elements that sort of turned it in my favor is I think the team involved were really trying to speak to the human condition in this movie. I think there's a lot of deep themes that they have going on here. I don't think this is just a surface level movie about like, here's a wild time travel movie. They dig into some really important things in this movie, like love, loss, sadness, depression, kind of like struggling with those as a person. There's a whole bunch of other things as well, but I thought they did a good job of instilling that heart into the movie, but it wasn't like forced to us. I kind of had to search for it myself. I was kind of like, well, you know, thinking about it after, I'm like, well, they kind of like, this was kind of like an emotional part here. And then when this conversation happened, it's like, it seems pretty deep. And then I kind of realized like they were really trying to get to something. And I appreciated that aspect of it. I'm not really going to get into what all the themes were, you know, but they're there.
Yeah. I would have to agree with that they are there. One of my, you know, beefs with it is that I didn't think that those were earned. I think they could have done a few things a different way so that I would care about it more and see it more and feel it more. Where for me, it was like, it was right there, but I feel like you did it the wrong way. That's just where some of my thoughts, I felt like they weren't quite earning their moments.
Tough to earn your moments in this movie just because of the format. You know,
it's part of the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. The format is, I feel like it's almost like you, the audience, has to earn it after the movie by taking the time to think about the movie, because the movie gives you just enough. They give you what they can to tell their story, but if they really dug into any one of those things too deeply, the movie would sort of not be what it is anymore. And I think the onus is on us to go out and really think about it. And I will say, Dean, since you didn't like it, I'm sure you weren't thinking too much about it. After my first viewing, this movie like consumed my brain for multiple days. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I think because of that, I really spent a lot of time with it and kind of formulating ideas and opinions about it. So
I will say that same thing. Like, that's why this is cool to have this movie, because I didn't like it and it also consumed me. Like, I watched it yesterday and watched it today. It consumed me the entire day. I was like breaking it down constantly with my wife, trying to find out if I like what I'm missing, the parts I didn't like, why I didn't like them, the parts I liked, why I liked them. I was trying to put it all together and figure it all out. So I have thought quite a lot about it. I think that's what it does. I think that's what it does to you. I think if you like it or you don't like it, you have to think about it and you have to I had to figure out why I didn't like it. Cause you can't, with this type of movie, I feel like you can't just come in and be like, I didn't like that. There's too much going on to just say that. So I had to figure out, okay, yeah, that's the reason why.
This is very strange because you like everything.
I know. That's what I said. I said, I like everything. I went on like all of the apps where people review movies. And I'm like, there's so many positive reviews. What am I missing? You know, what am I missing here? So I had to go dig into it and see like, okay, I must be missing something. But no, I just did not like it.
Okay. I'm curious to dig into it. So yeah. Very, very quickly, this was directed by the Spierig brothers. They have done Daybreakers, which is a vampire movie. They did Jigsaw, which is that horror clown movie. Now, one of the most amazing things about this movie, in my opinion, is that this is based on a short story from 1958.
Yeah.
So consider this story coming to the brain of a man in 1958. That really blows me away.
Yeah.
That man's name, by the way, is Robert A. Heinlein, and he is a legend in the sci-fi writing universe. He's up there with all of the sci-fi greats. He has a gigantic library of stuff. I hadn't heard of him before, but this guy is legit.
Yeah, I knew this was based on a short story before watching it. And it's exactly when the movie ended, I said, I think I would really enjoy that short story. Like that, even though I wasn't liking the movie, the ideas there are cool. And I think I would like the short story.
It's a fascinating idea, man. I've never really come across an idea like this before. This is kind of one of the most grandiose time travel ideas that I've ever seen in a movie.
For sure.
Whether or not you think it was executed correctly or not. The idea is here. This is why I didn't know if this was a good movie or not. I didn't know if this was a great idea wrapped up in a movie that wasn't very good, or if this was just altogether pretty good. But
yeah.
The movie stars Ethan Hawke, Sarah Snook, and Noah Taylor. Powerhouse acting in this movie. You cannot deny that.
For sure.
I was like blown away by the level of acting. It's just like every scene I was like, holy shit. I would pause and I'm like, Ethan Hawke, you are an incredible actor. And I mean, I think Sarah Snook, she kind of stole the show.
Steals the show for sure.
Noah Taylor, I mean, incredible. Excellent as well. But
yeah.
I would recommend that people go out and watch this. Dean would recommend you don't go out and watch it. But what's going to happen here is we are going to fully spoil everything. This is a movie where everything is going to get ruined for you. So if you don't care about that, then buckle up. We're going to get right into it. Before we go into full spoilers, Dean, I thought it might be a good idea just to kind of review the intro of the movie. And then we can just like blow the lid off this thing.
Okay, sure. But yeah.
The intro of the movie sets up Ethan Hawke's character as Agent Doe. He is a time cop. He's been trying to capture a criminal named the Fizzle Bomber. And the Fizzle Bomber's biggest attack happens in 1975, where he blows up 10 blocks of New York, killing 11,000 people. Now, in this intro, we see an agent approaching a bomb. Then the Fizzle Bomber shows up to prevent this agent from defusing it. The agent is able to get the bomb into a special blast container, but it goes off just before the lid can be closed all the way. And this agent is burnt by the flames, like melting his face. He's able to use his time travel device to travel back to the future. And a doctor there is able to give him a new face. And that is the face of Ethan Hawke. So this was a little bit weird to understand right off the bat that this agent that we saw get burnt wasn't Ethan Hawke's character of Agent Doe, but it becomes Ethan Hawke because of the face change.
Okay, sure, yeah.
Now that's something you forget about really quickly in this movie, but
yeah.
Is like a really big point down the road. I just kind of, whatever. Anyways, that's all I wanted to say about the intro.
Okay, cool.
So let's just get into the big twist of this movie.
Yeah.
Which is that there are basically four main characters. There's Agent Doe. There's the Fizzle Bomber. There's John. And there's Jane. And the big twist is that they are all the same person.
Yeah.
So if we were watching the story play out on a single timeline, we could watch this one person's life play out because the person starts as Jane, then becomes John, then becomes Agent Doe, then becomes the Fizzle Bomber. But with the time travel aspect that's thrown in, you have them traveling to different timelines and interacting with each other. And this is how the movie fools us into really having no idea what's going on. And I thought the movie did a really good job with that, of like fooling us into being confused and thinking that these were all different characters until the very end when it's revealed.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's like how I watched it, where my mind was when I watched it, but like right at the beginning, like you said, the agent's face gets blown off and then Ethan Hawke gets a new face. They talk about him having a new face and then he travels back in time And instantly I'm like, he's going to talk to his younger self, and his younger self isn't going to know what he looks like.
Right.
So right away I'm thinking, okay, going to be talking to his younger self. So the first person he's talking to, I'm like, that's his younger self. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else. So like any main character that's introduced, other than these two and other than Jane, is not shown. Like their face is not shown. And so like halfway through the movie, we're just, they're talking still, just John and Ethan Hawke, Agent Doe are talking and telling Jane's, like John's story as Jane as a child. And I paused it, it was halfway through the movie, and I paused it and I said, these are the only two characters in the movie, and there's a bunch of characters, there's four characters, three or four characters, we haven't seen their faces. I'm like, they're all of those characters. And I also think they're each other. So that's where I was like, I felt like I knew that they were all the characters, and also then they were each other. So I like, I couldn't quite put it all together and how it would all work, but I did have that feeling. And I didn't dislike that. Like I liked that feeling. That's not something I disliked about it, but I did feel like it's tough when you're hiding so many people's faces in a movie like this, where I get to the end and I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess so. But like, you didn't give me that piece. You didn't show me anybody's face. You were hiding most of the characters' faces. So I don't really have connections to the faces you were hiding. I feel like more like, okay, I'm just guessing who that is, and I think I know who that is. So then when the big twist is that's who that was, I didn't find the impact of it, I guess.
Hmm.
Like Ethan Hawke has this big like, oh, the Fizzle Bomber is my arch nemesis. I didn't get that because I never saw them in a scene together talking to each other. Like they were in a scene together fighting once, but I was just thinking, that's him. He's fighting himself.
And well, then, I mean, that was a lot. They dropped lines like that. Like he was the one who has come the closest to apprehending. He's like kind of obsessed with this Fizzle Bomber.
Yeah, but that's why I feel like it didn't earn, because I didn't feel it, because I never saw it, I guess.
Hmm.
Okay. So they also talk about him being like this great agent, this incredible agent, saved so many lives. I never saw any of it. You know, all I've seen this entire movie is this one little story.
Yeah, that's exactly. You nailed it right there. This movie is about one little story. It's about a time loop. That's what we're watching. That's what they're showing us.
I know. I know. But I am have to accept this story. As this has to happen for the greater good of man, it has to. And I've never seen any of that. I've never seen any of this guy doing his stuff. So I just have no feeling about it. I mean, like, I don't think he's the greatest time agent in the world.
I think it's all revealed to you at the end. That's where that feeling comes from. I don't think they could reveal that to you in the movie. It wouldn't have fit. So the moment that you get that is at the end, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, that's okay. I just didn't feel any. I didn't get any of it. So I was trying to figure out why I didn't feel any connection to like that.
Yeah, I don't think they were trying to connect you to that.
Well, they want the audience to think that he has to be the greatest agent ever because he's about to ruin his own life as a younger person, and it has to be for the greater good. We have to accept that it's for the greater good. And I guess I didn't feel like that sacrifice was worth any of this.
I mean, I don't think they ever said that he has to be the greatest. He's the greatest agent ever. I never heard that. He's a time agent. He's a good one. There's 11 of them.
Yeah, I also don't know if that's a lie or not. Sorry, there's too much
going on
in this
movie. I have
a
theory about that. I'll touch on that later, but I have a theory about that, and I think it's pretty cool. But anyways, just moving on a little bit here. I mentioned this time loop. Which is basically what this movie is all about. It's the core. It's that there's a time loop happening. It's a predestined chain of events that continue to occur over and over again, the exact same way each time, never being able to be broken. So I do want to talk about this time loop because I think it's fascinating. And this is where all of the big twists come into play.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for sure.
Some of the characters being the same person was pretty obvious. And then for me, I wasn't really looking for it. I was letting the movie kind of wash over me. So other things I didn't notice. But I will say I had Agent Doe being the Fizzle Bomber ruined for me because I went on Wiki ahead of time just to do a little bit of research, and he's named as both.
So, oh, okay.
But I thought that was going to be the big twist, was that he's just this good agent, and it turns out he's the one doing the bombing. But the movie gives you so much more than that. So
yeah,
I mean, that kind of sucked a little bit, but at the same time, it wasn't too big of a deal.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to go through this time loop.
Perfect. Yeah.
And just explain what we saw in the movie and like what this is all about. So Jane as a baby, and please stop me at any point if you want to talk about any of this.
Sure. Sure. Okay.
But Jane as a baby is dropped off at an orphanage. Jane grows up and meets a man. We don't see his face. She falls in love, and one day the man disappears. Jane learns that he got her pregnant, and she gives birth to a baby girl. Then her baby is kidnapped, never seen again. Jane learns from giving birth that she was born with internal organs of both a man and a woman. Complications with the birth forced the doctors to take out her lady parts and alter her male parts so that she can continue to live. And at that point, Jane transitions into a man and becomes John. And you know what, dude? I just have to throw this out there. John looks so much like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Couldn't stop saying it. Couldn't stop seeing it. There's John's like introduction is sitting at the bar and being like, what do I look like? I think that's one of John's like first lines. And yeah. I just said it loud, Leonardo DiCaprio.
100%. It's uncanny, in fact.
Uncanny.
Okay. Now, many years later, John meets Agent Doe at the bar, lays his horrible life story out on the line to Agent Doe, ultimately saying that the man she loved who disappeared ruined her entire life. So Doe asks John, I mean, I'm sure everybody's caught on to it now. Their names are John and Jane and Doe.
And Agent Doe.
but Doe asks John, if he was put in front of that man, would he kill him? And John says, hell yeah, he would. So Doe goes on at that point to explain he's from a time travel agency and he'll take John back in time to kill this man if John will agree to join the agency. And John agrees. So they go back in time to the day Jane meets this man. And this was a great scene, I thought, as in the process of John looking for this man to shoot, he's got a gun. You know, we're looking around and we see someone. We're like, is that the guy? Is that the guy? And then John bumps into Jane. They flirt and he realizes he is, in fact, the man that she fell in love with. So this, there's no way you were onto this. This is a wild twist.
So this is where my mind was going. I actually did think that this was going to be the guy, but I was like, they're not going to do that though, right? Like I was still like not 100% on it, but I was like making jokes about it, you know, like as it was coming up, I'm like, oh, and then like she's going to bump into him and he's going to be the guy,
right?
But they're not actually going to do that.
Yeah,
right?
No. Yeah, I thought same thing. I'm like, yeah, what if he bumps into her? And then I actually did think that he was going to bump into her and it would be like a Back to the Future moment where they're just kind of like,
right,
he doesn't show his face and he just like talks for a bit but then walks away. But no, they like fully get engaged.
And it started like that. I said this is a Back to the Future moment because it started with them talking backs to each other. And I was still at that point. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, they're just going to do that and then keep going. But no, like when this happened, I was like, okay, I you're cooking here, movie. I see what you're doing.
Yeah, so John like falls for Jane. Jane falls for John. They have sex with each other. And Jane has a baby because of that. So Jane essentially gives birth to both of them. Because Jane and John are the same people.
Yeah.
Just from different periods in time, they have sex and create themselves.
Yeah, we don't really know that at that time,
we
though,
don't.
Because Ethan Hawke ends up taking that. He's the one who steals the baby and takes it back to the very beginning orphanage that Jane was dropped off at. So, yes, they have sex. Jane has a baby. They birth. She births. They birth.
She births herself, herself and John.
Wild, wild stuff. I will say this is like the key moment of why I don't like the movie.
I get that.
It's the key moment I don't like it, because why did John do this when this ruined his life as Jane? And he wants to be Jane. He wants to be a woman. He doesn't want to be a man. He wants to be Jane. Why would he ever do this?
Why would he do what?
Why would he sleep with her? He knows it's him. He knows I'm the guy.
Because he loves her. This is one of the aspects of where love comes into play.
Sure, but if he's it's for himself. I know he is himself. But if he loves her, he will let her be who she wants to be. Like, he will let her live her life by not ruining it and turning her into John. She doesn't want to be John. Like, she wants to be Jane.
They both want to be in love. And that's one of the aspects of the movie. A deep... And all four of these characters, who are the same person, all throughout this movie show a deep need for love and to be loved. Because they never grew up with parents, right? They don't have any family. They are alone. All they have is each other. And there's several moments where all of them just want to be loved. And they end up finding that love, as weird as it is, with each other. So in that moment, they're both in love. And further to, you know, answer your question, why does he do this? Why didn't he do something else? That's the whole idea of this movie. It's a time loop. They are all predestined to make these choices and mistakes, whatever you want to call them, over and over and over again. They talk a little bit about choice in the movie. They make it sound like some of the characters have choices to make. And ultimately, at the end of things, I don't think any of these characters had any choice at all. They are stuck in a predestination paradox. There's nothing they can do to break free from it. And that's the idea of this movie. It's that they're just stuck in it. This is a time travel anomaly that's occurring. You can't do anything about it.
Yeah. So it's the idea I love. I love the idea. And this is, I guess, where I mean, something just didn't feel earned to me, because you just set up the half of the movie telling this story and how much John hates his life and what happened. He's ready and willing to shoot the man in the face of who did this to him. And then he figures out it was him and he goes through with it. So I just would have liked it handled a little better, like the predestination thing. Honestly, I want Ethan Hawke to kind of... Ethan Hawke is the older one, the one who knows all the stuff that's happened and what has, like, all the lives that have to be saved. Him to force something.
Well, he does.
Force John. But he doesn't. He just puts John in
front of... No, listen. He does it. He does it at the end. Because the exact same scenario hits Ethan Hawke's character at the end. He's put in front of the man who ruined his life, and he has a chance to kill him, and he does. As John didn't take that step to kill Jane. He made that mistake. Ethan Hawke, Agent Doe, at the end, when he finally confronts the bomber, he's given the same opportunity. He's put in front of the man who ruined his life, and he does it. He kills him. When he couldn't do it before, he got a second chance at it, and he kills him, and it's a mistake. It's the thing that keeps this loop going. So I think it's interesting because he got a second chance at it, maybe realized he made a mistake the first time, does it the second time. It was a mistake the second time.
Yeah. So, like, again, I agree. I like it. I like the idea of it. It's just, I feel like they have the characters messed up. They have the characters switched, because I don't think that the fizzle bomber has ruined Ethan Hawke's life. I don't get that at all.
Oh, because that's been his obsession. His entire life is trying to catch the fizzle bomber.
I don't get any of that, because the whole movie, I get everything about John. I get how hurt John is. John told a story for 40 minutes and I got how hurt John was, and John couldn't do it. But Ethan Hawke, who's just telling me that this is his nemesis, that's who does it. Like, for me, it didn't work. I thought they needed to be switched.
Maybe you missed some lines or something, because there was a lot of stuff about Ethan Hawke's character being obsessed with this fizzle bomber. And if this fizzle bomber didn't exist, Doe could have a normal life, but he can't. This is his his obsession. He keeps missing the bomber. He keeps traveling through time trying to catch it. He cannot catch him. It's his obsession.
Yeah, I want to see it. I didn't see any of it.
So John disappears, right? He's the man who disappears from Jane's life. He disappears because Agent Doe left him there for a little bit, but then comes back to take John to the future to uphold his part of the bargain to become a time agent. As an agent, John is the one who's burned by the bomb and gets the new face of Agent Doe. As you mentioned, Agent Doe is the one who steals the baby and takes it back in time and is the one who drops the baby off to the orphanage. Then Agent Doe finally catches up with the fizzle bomber and realizes it's himself. This fizzle bomber is him, kind of like mentally broken down by all the time travel jumps. They tell us that it can like starts to break you down mentally, and he believes what he's doing is right. Killing these people is right. Agent Doe shoots him and thus becomes the fizzle bomber. By killing him in that moment, he seals this predestination paradox and becomes him. Okay, the way to break that paradox would be not to shoot the fizzle bomber or to shoot himself. But he does the wrong thing. He shoots the fizzle bomber.
Right? Yeah, I like that. I like that shoot himself. That would really, that would really do it. I like this ending. I'm like, how is he going to be the fizzle bomber? Like, I know he's going to be, but how is this going to work out? I like what they're saying here because Ethan Hawke, so fizzle bomber, still has the violin case. It still works. The violin case is the time travel tool. It's what they use. It's the time travel machine. It's the machine they use. Still has it. It still works. So I believe fizzle bomber is going forward in time and seeing what's going to happen, coming back in time and stopping those things from happening by blowing things up that's actually going to cause other people to die, but is weighing that against, 3,000 people were going to die here, so I blew up this building so that didn't happen, but people died in there.
So
I like getting your mind, I like as Ethan Hawke getting so into it and so like crazy because he's jumped so much and worrying about saving people that he gets to a point where he's like, okay, I'll save more if I do this one thing. If I do this bomb, I'll save more people. It's for the greater good because he's already done something in the movie for the greater good. So just keep doing that. I do like that's where the fizzle bomber gets to. That's how he gets there.
This was a great aspect of the movie. Okay, because we're led to believe the fizzle bomber is bad. I would suggest the fizzle bomber is not bad. And this whole time loop that's going on is in place so the fizzle bomber can exist and do what the fizzle bomber is doing. Like you mentioned, yes, the fizzle bomber is blowing up buildings because there's people in those buildings who go on to do terrible things that end up killing way more people than he's killing by blowing up the buildings. So in fact, he's saving lives, right? They use a line in the movie. They say at one point that John goes on to save something like a million lives. So a million lives versus maybe roughly 15,000 that we hear about the fizzle bomber killing. That's a huge difference, right? I think this time travel agency is existing and allowing this time loop to continue to happen so that they continue to save these millions of lives.
Yeah, I agree. I think the time travel agency knows who they know Ethan Hawke's the fizzle bomber. They're letting him do his thing. To save more lives. I would still say it's a like it's they're doing it for the greater good type thing.
Yes,
you know, like
yes.
It's still they're killing innocent people. So they're doing this like, oh, we'll weigh a number versus a bigger number.
Correct.
When I feel like, yeah, you would, it's one of those, yeah, it's those questions they ask you, would you like push someone in front of a train if that train would not hit 20 people because of it? You know, it's like that those whole like philosophical questions that are impossible to answer.
Yeah. So stepping back for a second, I don't think that Ethan Hawke, once he kills the fizzle bomber, starts traveling forward in time.
Because his case still works.
His time travel case still works.
Yeah.
When he gets to the year where he finally catches up with the Fizzle Bomber, he's basically retiring. They say, like, what year do you want to retire to? Since he's been obsessed with the Fizzle Bomber, he retires, like, to where the Fizzle Bomber is, like, days before. And as he gets there and retires, his time travel device is going to be decommissioned. It looks like it gets decommissioned, and then there's, like, a fail alert on it. So it didn't actually get decommissioned. It's still going to work. So he's still sane, in my opinion. I think what happens is he kills the Fizzle Bomber here, and he starts to live his life out in 1975. He continues to live his life, and he sees these travesties start to happen, these horrible events. And that, along with the degradation of his mind, which is coming from all these time travel jumps he does, he realizes, look, I could go back in time and kill the people who have, like, caused these atrocities to happen. And at that point, he starts doing these jumps back in time, which further breaks him down mentally. And that's where he ends up in the end. And because, like, again, he Fizzle Bomber, he thinks he's doing the right thing. And he's, like, explaining it to, you know, younger himself, saying, like, look, this is what I'm doing. Here's clippings from the future of these terrible events that would have occurred, but I actually stopped them. And I think in that end moment where Ethan Hawke kills the Fizzle Bomber, he's basically saying he's ready to kill someone to save the lives of others, right? He's going to kill the Fizzle Bomber so the Fizzle Bomber can't blow anybody up. That sets his footing in place to be this guy who will kill many, many more to save many, many more. He's already showing himself as the Fizzle Bomber by killing the Fizzle Bomber.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. He is, he's not going forward to see what happens. He's living it and then going back and changing it. I think I agree, yeah, definitely that's happening. It's still, like, it's super fucked up stuff, though. It's like when he was showing the clippings, it was like this truck, this tanker spilled on, like, crashed and spilled on the highway and killed 200 people, but that guy never made it to work that day. So it's like, that's not good. That guy just crashed his truck. Like, he didn't mean to hurt anybody. You got to do something better than just killing him. So I think he, like, gets too far down the line of, like, okay, just a numbers game, you know, wipe this person out, this person gets saved. Because they do talk a lot in the movie about him, the amount of jumps he's doing is making his, like, psyche break a bit, and I think that's where he gets to.
Yeah, so here's an interesting thing about the jumps. They make a point of saying jumping is bad, it's going to break your mind down eventually. We see Agent Doe making some illegal jumps that he wasn't authorized to do, which are further going to break him down mentally. Here's another gigantic aspect that you need to take into consideration. John is Agent Doe. So every time John is jumping, that's additional damage to Doe, right? So it's like there's so many jumps through all of these timelines that he's made. Yeah. It's on the surface level, we're just thinking that it's Agent Doe, Ethan Hawke, making these jumps. But it's also John who makes who knows how many hundreds of jumps.
For sure.
So it's like the numbers compounded. So I think he really, like, was in a bad spot with his mind.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah.
So we haven't really talked about this Mr. Robertson character, but he's sort of like the head guy of the agency. We see him often in the movie. He's sort of like the guy who's making sure things are occurring the way that they're supposed to. He's kind of like, he's urging all of the characters in certain directions. So I think he's there to make sure that this time loop continues to happen the way it's supposed to happen so that this agency can continue to save all the lives that they're saving. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think he, I think he's on the lookout for somebody like Jane to create this paradox, to create this time paradox, so that they have an agent who's in it, like so that they have an agent, because an agent, he says, that does has no past and no future. And when he's talking to Ethan Hawke right before Ethan Hawke's going to steal the baby, he's like, "You're the only one who can do this job." You know, you're the only paradox. You have no past, no future. I feel like he orchestrated this, you know, like
I agree.
He was looking out for this. He was looking out for something like this to create this.
I think it, I don't know if he was looking out for it, but I agree. I think it, I think he found it. I think he
This, it came out of what he found.
The character of Jane was an anomaly, they said. They said she was one of a kind, having both the male and female reproductive organs. So what that allowed them to do was, like, with time travel, create Jane, create John, have them have sex to create themselves, and you have this character who's outside of the footprint of, like, having any relations with anybody in the world. So I'm not explaining this very well, but I did find a couple of really interesting quotes that I want to read about kind of this scenario. Everyone who has ever lived has essentially 2 billion years. Okay, now this person's saying they've been alive for 2 billion years, but whatever, let's say however long you think people have been around for. They have that many years of past connections to the world, right? Because you have ancestry going back in time, you have ancestry going forward in time. So it would be impossible for someone like you or me to interact with any time period without interacting with a world that has hundreds or thousands or millions of connections to us. Even if those connections are, like, separated by so many different degrees, a person who exists in a single loop, which these characters are living in, and is covering less than half a century, would be uniquely divorced from the world, which I think is an interesting way to put it. Their life, their death, their actions are so self-contained that they are far less likely to deliberately or inadvertently create paradoxes involving their own existence. So this is sort of the perfect time travel agent, because they don't have any connections to anyone other than themselves, and their entire lifespan is about 50 years. That's the loop that continues to happen. So here's another quote that I thought was interesting about why, like, them as an agent would be a good idea to, like, to have them doing what they're doing. This person said, "It seems to me that there is a single timeline that has been edited. Perhaps we are seeing the final version of that timeline. And they must be intentionally creating loops. It's the only way to prevent disasters in the future. Think about it. If you go back and kill Hitler, in a new timeline, there is no Hitler. So there's no reason to go back and kill Hitler. But if you create a loop where someone has knowledge of the alternate future, they can go back and kill Hitler, while being the only ones aware of the need for this to happen. What better way to do this than to create someone that only exists within the edited time space?"
Yeah, great. This is why we're doing a movie like this, so we can have these conversations that make your brain melt.
Yeah, because I know.
It's like, I'm saying, like, oh yeah, Robertson was on the lookout for somebody to create this perfect agent. And it's like, but you need time travel to create the perfect agent. She already needed to have been born. She already needed to be put. It's like the whole chicken egg paradox thing of just like, no. Like, how could you actually start? How could she exist there if they didn't already put her there?
And that's why we can't get too serious about it. Because again, at the very core, this movie is a time paradox, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be, like, unanswered questions. There's going to be things that don't make sense because this isn't something that can really even happen in the first place.
Yeah.
So I want to get to my theory, if that's okay.
Cool, yeah.
And it revolves around the line of Agent Doe telling John that he is one of 11 agents.
Yeah. I want to talk about this for sure.
Okay, so I thought that was just a very arbitrary number to throw out there and a line that goes nowhere in the movie. So did you think anything about that? Do you have any thoughts about that before I get into what I think?
No, see, I thought, I'll go first because you've thought about it more than me. I was trying to think about it and couldn't come up with it because what I thought was that I still had this whole idea that Robertson created this person in order to be able to have no ties to the world at all, like could do these time travel jumps without affecting their life or whatever, with paradoxes.
This is possible. Without creating paradoxes. I agree with you. Like, this is a possibility in the movie that they just don't tell us. That could have happened.
Yeah. So that's how I feel. That's what I feel like happened. So then I was thinking, Agent Doe is the only agent. I was thinking there are no other agents. Agent Doe's the only one because it's this paradox. It's this time paradox that they've created. So then I just have no idea why he said 11. So yeah, I've been trying to think about why he said 11, because in my mind, he's actually the only one.
Okay. My theory is the exact opposite of that.
Okay.
It is that he is all 11 of them.
Oh yeah, okay. Sure.
Follow with me if you can. I think it takes all 11 agents. You're looking up at the ceilings with a scowl on your face right now, trying to figure out how this is even possible, right? I like it.
I'm doing the math. I'm trying to work the numbers, crunch the numbers.
Yeah, okay. So here, I'll explain it. I think it takes all 11 agents to keep this time loop going. Okay? I think the entire agency is basically there to keep this time loop going, where in this span of 50 years, they end up saving millions of lives. Then they have to keep it going, because every time, if you want to save the lives, you have to do the time loop again. So if we account for the four characters, John, Agent Doe, the bomber, and Jane, and count them existing in their own timeline, and also when they cross over into someone else's timeline, I end up with a count of 11.
Okay, sorry, say that again.
So if we account for the four characters, right, who are all the same person, John, Doe, the bomber, and Jane.
Okay, yeah.
Account for them in this timeline that we have, okay?
Yeah.
They're all in their own timeline. They all cross over into other timelines. So if you look at them all...
Yeah, they're all in someone else's timeline.
If you look at every instance of them as a time agent, as someone who needs to exist in order to keep this loop going, you need 11 of them. If you pull one of them out of one of those scenarios, this time loop will fall apart.
Yeah, so you need all 11.
So I'll break down the 11 instances. So if you would, Dean, would you keep track by counting for us as I go through them?
Got it. Yeah.
You have John living in his natural timeline, right? So each of these characters has their own timeline when they are themselves.
Okay, but John's natural timeline is also Jane's natural timeline.
Well, no, because Jane becomes John at one point. So as soon as John becomes John, he exists as John. And he's doing John things.
Okay, sure, yeah. It's the same timeline, though.
Well, if you look, okay, so like Jane's timeline would be like years zero to like, I don't know, 25. And then she becomes John. And John's timeline is like 25 to maybe 35 when he becomes Agent Doe. Agent Doe is like 35 to 45 and then becomes a fizzle bomber.
My brain's melting. Do you see my brain coming out of my nose?
I was hoping this would make sense, because like Jane only exists as Jane in her period.
Okay, just keep going. It'll make sense. It'll make sense to me.
I hope people at home are being able to follow along. So they're all going to exist in their natural timeline. Like, okay, if I'm living my life, right?
Yes.
And then...
But here's what I'm thinking. One timeline is Baby Jane, Child Jane, John, Ethan Hawke, Agent Doe, Fizzle Bomber. That's one timeline. And then as they jump into other times of that timeline would be counting to me.
It's because they're different characters doing different things. They have each one of those characters has an objective in order to keep this time loop going, right? Jane has to be Jane doing her stuff for this to work. Then John has to be John and do his stuff.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. So I'm counting each of those as a timeline for that character.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm considering each of those people as an agent of the Bureau.
Yeah.
If you don't have Jane, you don't have John. If you don't have John, you don't have Agent Doe. So they're like, they're all, I'm seeing them as all agents working for this cause. This is going to get real difficult, Dean, if you're lost at this point already.
It's just not my brain thinks of the time loop.
Okay. Yeah, but yes, I did spend some time Thinking about the timeline, but okay, John
from the top.
John in his natural timeline.
Got it.
He travels to Jane's timeline.
Yes. So is that two?
He has sex with her. So yeah, I'm counting that as two because he has now gone to a different timeline. Yeah. He's doing some sort of action that's going to keep this loop going, and that
Agreed.
Is impregnating Jane with themselves.
So that had to happen. This is two. Yes, I agree that this is two, even in my thinking.
Oh,
this
perfect. That had to happen. Okay. Then John goes with Doe to Doe's timeline, which is the future where Doe works at the agency. John becomes an agent in the future. So that's
three.
Okay. Then we have Agent Doe in his own timeline, which is in the future as an agent.
Okay.
Now he travels to Jane's timeline to steal the baby.
Yeah.
He goes to John's timeline at the bar to recruit him, which is six.
Yep.
Doe goes to the bomber's timeline to kill him.
Bomber's timeline. Yep, seven.
The bomber is in his own timeline.
Okay, eight.
He goes to John's timeline and melts John's face off with the bomb.
Nice. Nine.
So we're two away. That leaves us with Jane. And here's where this almost fell apart for me. Sounds like it fell apart for you a long time ago. That's okay. This is where things almost fell apart for me is Jane doesn't travel through time. So I've got Jane in her own timeline, which is 10. And then I'm like, where's 11?
Sure. Yeah.
And then I figured it out is that she gives birth to baby Jane, and baby Jane exists in older Jane's timeline.
Okay. Yeah.
And has to be taken back to baby Jane's timeline.
Yeah.
Which would be 11. So what I'm seeing is that if any of these moments don't occur, if any of these characters are not in this specific timeline at that moment, this time loop falls apart.
Right, for sure.
Because something won't happen. Something that needs to happen won't happen, which is why I think they are all the 11 agents. They are the agency. They are keeping everything going.
Yeah. I like this. I love it, actually. I agree with this. I would like to put some pen to paper and figure it out for the wrap up.
That'd be great.
For myself. Yeah.
That'd be great. I'd love it. I would love it if you do that.
Cool.
Okay. So just really quickly here to touch on some of the time travel stuff. They do kind of get into the technology of things. They don't really get into it really deeply, but they give us a short explanation of how the time travel works.
I love it.
Yeah, they show us the time travel device many times.
Cool jumps.
Yeah, you basically disappear then reappear, but it's kind of violent. You're kind of like, you're upset. You're not feeling good when it happens. You have to get used to it. He jumped when he was inside of a car, and all the windows blew out of the car. It was awesome.
Yeah. And his hat just like flew off. It was awesome. Yeah. It looked cool.
Yeah. So like you said, it's like this violin case, but it's actually a time travel device. They kind of explain what it is, how much it weighs, what it does for you. There's, you know, just like those little old knobs, old number wheels that would be on an old briefcase lock. It's got a bunch of those and you just enter in the time you want to go to and then it'll take you there. You hold it close to your chest and take a deep breath and then it like transports you. Pretty cool.
You can only jump in a certain like amount of years, which I love.
This is very cool. You can only jump in a certain amount of years before or after time travel was invented or discovered.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it's something like 53 years in each direction
or
something.
I think it was 52 or 53. Yeah. 52 or 53 in each direction. So 52.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. I liked that a lot in his explanation. So like time travel in the movie was invented in 1981, pretty early.
And yeah, really.
You could go 52 years ahead of that or 52 years in the past from 1981. So that was kind of cool.
I liked John's watch. Just like a pretty basic looking.
Awesome.
Like
yeah.
Almost like an Apple watch, but like it's his way of confirming that he's landed in the right spot because he can just look at his watch and it'll tell him what year he's in. I thought that was a really nice touch, just not assuming I've made it to the right place, but he'll do these jumps and he'll look at his watch to confirm everything is cool.
Yeah. really like, and it like helps us to be like, okay, because he like puts it into the case, he puts the year into the case, but like just so we know, you know, he checks his watch and it gives us the date that he's in. So I like that. It was a good good device.
Well, that was another thing I thought they did a fantastic job with, was I was never confused about what year it was or where they were going, totally. Because they always show you on the time travel device the year that has been entered, and you know where you're going. And I liked that they didn't do that with like a graphic on the screen. I thought that might have taken me out of the movie a little bit. They just it's totally contained within the movie what year they're going to. It's very natural.
Yeah. Great choice.
Yeah, so I like the way time travel was handled. It wasn't wasn't one of these things where they're going to get really involved with what's happening, but they got involved enough for us to just kind of like feel good about it. And a really interesting concept that they talked about that I don't think I've seen before in time travel. It was Agent Doe explaining how to be successful at time travel. And that was to travel where you want to travel to ahead of time and prepare for your visit.
Right. So
if you're going to, if you're going to jump somewhere, you need to go there ahead of time and you need to pre-book a hotel room. You need to have clothing there. You need to stash a gun if you need a gun. All that needs to be waiting for you when you make your jump for your mission. I thought that was really interesting and also kind of opens up another rabbit hole. Like, when does that end? Like, why not prepare for your jump by jumping, but why not prepare for that jump by jumping ahead? And why not prepare for that jump by jumping? Like, you could have all these preparation jumps and it could get out of hand, but interesting
this is one of those. Yeah, this is one of those things I loved that they showed us. Like, he explained this, always prepare for your jump is a cool idea. But then when he was jumping places, he'd just walk towards whatever he had set up. He'd walk towards the closet and start changing his clothes, or he'd walk over here and start loading up a backpack. It's like, yes, like, that's cool. You get to see a little bit of the actual time travel action of him going in and going straight to the thing he set up. I really liked that.
Interesting movie. I really did enjoy the pacing. The first half of the movie is all like dramatic setup for what's to come. But I know you're not a fan, so that's fine. But as I was watching, I was kind of like really enthralled by this early stuff, which is probably the less interesting stuff in the movie. It's mostly about Jane and her life into being transitioned into John. But I never felt bored. I never felt like I wanted to turn it off. I was sort of confused, like at that halfway point. I'm like, is this really about time travel? Like, what's going on here? They really kind of kicked that into high gear in the second half. But it was interesting.
I could be wrong though.
Like I said, I wasn't sure if I liked it, or I wasn't sure if I thought it was good or not. Just because I'm landing on good now, I could be wrong. I don't know. I would like other people to tell me if this is a good movie or not, because I don't know. I have no idea.
Listen, the people out there, they like it. I understand liking it. Like, I totally get it. I like Jane a lot. I like Jane's story a lot. Half the movie is just about Jane's story. And I think this movie does Jane real dirty. And I just don't like it. I just don't like that part of it. I don't like that Jane always has to get her life ruined for John to exist.
It's for the greater good. Her life gets ruined so millions of people can live.
I just don't like it. I guess I don't like that John, so close to the pain, would still make that decision. I feel like if Ethan Hawke, if Doe did it, I'd accept it a bit
more. John makes that decision. So John is not going to make that decision, right? When Doe comes to take John back, like, this is the moment just before John disappears, where we see him with Jane. They're very happy together. Doe shows up to take John with him. John comes over with a gun and is going to shoot him.
Yes. I like that part, but they've already had sex. He's already done the thing that she hates that ruined her life.
But in John's opinion, in his mind, he's not going back with Doe. He says, I'm not going to hurt her. Right?
Yes. So has to become John.
What changes his mind?
What changes?
Why doesn't John kill Doe right in that moment? What changes his mind?
He tells him it's for the greater good.
He tells him that he is John. He tells him that they're the same person.
Well, yeah, right, yeah.
So he's like, this has to happen. Like, you have to leave her because you become me. And things are playing out the way they have to so that lives can be saved. And John was with you. John was like, I'm not going anywhere. I don't want to hurt her. I feel terrible for hurting her. And John says, I love her. And then Doe says, he's like, I love her too. Basically alluding to the fact that he is also, they are the same person. And so many confusing people. It's so confusing when everybody's
Jane,
the same
John
person.
And Doe.
Doe.
It's impossible.
Says to John, he's like, to sort of settle him, he says something about, John says, like, I love her so much. And Doe says to John, now she knows. Because they're the same person. So by John acknowledging that he loves her, Doe's alluding to the fact that, you know, now you know that you love her. And my mind's starting to melt here.
But I like it. I like that scene a lot. I do. It's just, he's already done it. He already did the thing that ruins Jane's life. Jane still has to go through that. She still won't know that this man loves her until she is that man later.
Right.
You know, I understand that it's confusing because it's all the same person. So it's a little bit different because it's all the same person. So you're kind of doing it to yourself. But it's a different, you know, it's a different character and you're still doing that to her. I don't like it.
But it's very much about moments like that where this person who is the same person has to do terrible things to themselves in order to keep everything going. Like, Doe has the exact same moment when he has to steal the baby. Robertson actually, he's not going to do it, actually. Robertson has to come. Robertson travels back in time to talk Doe into kidnapping the baby because Doe says the same thing. He says, this is going to hurt her so bad. I don't want to hurt her that bad because it's basically himself, right? And Robertson's like, you have to do this. This is your mission. It has to be this way. So he does it. These are some of the themes I'm talking about. Like, this entire movie, it's about like wanting to be loved, right? And wanting to be able to love yourself and who you are. They just set up all these different scenarios where this person, all this person wants, like I mentioned it earlier, all this person wants is to be loved because they didn't have anybody who ever loved them. They didn't have parents. And the only person that exists in the world to love them is themselves. So they're trying to get love from themselves every possible place they can in this movie. But at every turn, they have to like do something horrible to themselves to keep this time loop going, which is it's inevitable. There's no way to break it. It's going to happen over and over and over again. And that's the time loop. That's the paradox.
There you go.
Oh, man.
I'm tired.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go pass out. I was just thinking.
I need a nap.
That was a lot. I really hope that that's not just like a mumble jumble of stuff for people to listen to. I hope that.
Oh,
I
it
hope
for
that's
sure
somehow
will be.
Somehow in some way coherent. But that's what this movie was, everybody. We summed it up real well, I would say.
I think so, yeah.
All right. Well, we have to do our rankings. Dean, why don't you go first?
Okay, bottom to top, I got this movie, Predestination, then I got Time Cop, then I got Planet of the Apes, then I got About Time at the top.
All right, I struggled with this one, but I ended up with Time Cop at the bottom, Planet of the Apes, Predestination, and About Time.
Cool.
All right, Dean, I feel like you're done talking about this. Did we miss anything?
I'm done. Did you miss any? I mean, we can be done talking about it.
We've got the wrap up to chat. We've got a few.
Yes, we'll
some time.
Save it for the wrap up.
Save it for the wrap up.
Exactly. We'll save it for the wrap up. Yeah, sounds good.
Right on. All right. Well, thank you everybody for putting up with all of that. If you feel like supporting us, that'd be awesome. You can. There's lots of things you can do. We'd recommend checking out Patreon. That's probably the best because you get something and we get something. And check out our YouTube channel, Demo Dash. We play video games. We play demos from the Nintendo store. And we try to make it through a demo in 20 minutes. And sometimes we win and sometimes we lose, but we always have fun. And now that this episode's over, don't worry. Head on over to BFOPnetwork.com. There are a ton of excellent podcasts over there. We promise you'll find something you like. If you like listening to us, there's just so much more over there. Just make sure you still come back and listen to our episodes as well. Don't get lost over there in all the great content. Just remember. You easily could. People could go there and never come back. Just be like, wow, these podcasts are incredible. We're just, forget about talking back. But
if you don't show up to your job on Monday, we're sorry because you're lost.
Yeah, lots of great stuff there. So check it out. Dean, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks, Tim.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Hello!
La, la, la.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Corey.
And we are the hosts of Cartwright, a Seinfeld podcast. We are breaking down every single episode of Seinfeld as we watch it, reliving this amazing show.
That's right. It's a trip down memory lane for all of us 90s kids out there. You can find Cartwright, a Seinfeld podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and Patreon.
La, la, la.